So let's go back to the beginning here. Active, constructive. This is an authentic, enthusiastic response. It's like showing people that you genuinely care and that you're curious to learn more. So let's say I got a raise at work and I come home and I tell my wife. She might say, if she was responding in an active, constructive way, she might say, you know, honey, that's amazing. Like, you know, when did it happen? Like, how did it feel when they told you got that, you know, that raise and you got that promotion? Like, tell me more about this. So she's showing that like authentic, genuine response. This way, this active, constructive, this is where we want to be. This shows that we are, you know, authentically supporting them, that we're connecting, and it's the way that like we feel best supported. So both in good times and in bad times. Now let's talk about the other three, because this is where a lot of people end up in. Very oftentimes when you start to do a little self-analysis, you'll be shocked by like how little you do active constructive responding. So the other one is active destructive. And that means like you're actively quashing the event. You're being dismissive, you're being demeaning.
What's up, my friend, and welcome back to another episode of the Legendary Life Podcast. I'm your host, celebrity trainer and high-performance health coach, Ted Rice. This is a podcast for men and women who are looking to boost their energy and upgrade their health. So get ready and learn proven health, fitness, and mindset strategies to unlock your full potential. And today, we're going to talk all about mindset. My guest today is an expert on this. In fact, he teaches mindset / resilience techniques to the military. How incredible is that? And let me ask you, would you like to be more mentally resilient? Are you a person who gets sucked into arguments on social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram? Are you a person who gets easily triggered? Are you a person who suffers from road rage and someone cuts you off and you just kind of lose it and it stays with you and really affects you for a couple hours or maybe even the rest of the day? Are you a person who feels like it's easy to be happy and to be kind to others and to be in a good mood when everything's going your way? But as soon as something goes wrong, maybe a flat tire, maybe a problem at work, maybe a problem with one of your kids, you get a call from school about one of your kids and you start to lose it. Wouldn't it be nice to be that pillar of strength? Wouldn't it be nice to have that center and to be able to handle whatever gets thrown at you in life? And I hope you answered yes, because handling stress, managing stress, is one of the most important skills you can ever learn to do. And who better to talk to us about that than my friend, Tom Hefner. Tom is a podcaster, an author, a speaker, and an innovation expert. He is an Ivy League educated rock star, and I'm proud to call him a friend. And he's here today to share with you how he helps guys from the military, like special forces teams, get better resilience, improve their resilience so they are able to handle whatever they go through on the battlefield. And while life isn't necessarily a battlefield, that might be too strong of an analogy, it can get tough at times. And so these are tactics that work for the guys who are in the most extreme conditions. And so they'll definitely work with whatever you're going through in your life. And before we get to the interview, I just want to tell you, I am opening up a few spots for my one-on-one coaching. Now, here's the deal with this. I only take 10 clients at a time. So there are only limited number of spaces. And this isn't that time, you know, you hear people say, oh, for a limited time only, and there's only a few spots available, but there's actually a lot of spots left. That's not this case. I literally only take 10 clients at a time. And some of my clients who are working with me now are going to continue to work with me throughout the beginning of next year. If you're interested in working with me, if you have any interest at all, what I want you to do is to set up a call with me. And you can do that by going to legendarylifepodcast.com/talk. If you're not currently experiencing the best results ever from the program that you're on, if you're not getting results every single month, every single week, really, then I want you to set up a call with me. We'll talk about what you want to accomplish. We'll talk about what's working for you. And more specifically, we'll talk about what's not working for you and what you need to change to start getting the results that you truly want. You can set up that call at legendarylifepodcast.com/talk. This isn't for everybody. This is for people who are coachable, who are committed, and are ready to do the work. So you need to be decisive. You need to take action. If that's the type of person you are, then let's have a conversation. All right, that's all I have to say. Let's get into this interview with Tom Hefner. Tom Hefner, thanks so much for coming on the show, my friend.
Ted, thanks. Love it.
I'm really excited to have this conversation with you today. It's about such an important concept, the idea of resilience. And I want to get into all that great information because some people, they believe, like they'll look at someone like me who's been through a lot in their life and they'll think, well, either you're born resilient or you're not. And I know there's a lot of myths about what resilience is and whether we're born with it or if it's something that we can learn. And there's a lot of confusion and probably misinformation out there too, because, hey, it's the internet, the age of the internet, right? It's the information age. And there's so many blog posts and podcasts and people posing as experts. But before we get into that, I want the audience to know about your backgrounds, because you are an academic badass. You've taught resilience training to the military, the people who need it the most and are probably the most skeptical when it comes to who they learn from. So can you just talk a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what we're going to be going into today?
Yeah, no, I'd love to. So I have a little bit of a eclectical, weird kind of background, but my background is originally in engineering. And so kind of a dyed-in-the-wool engineer. I've worked at the Johns Hopkins University Applied Physics Laboratory doing hardcore engineering work. And I did that for about 6 or 7 years before I went back to the University of Pennsylvania to study psychology and applied psychology. And I studied with a guy named Martin Seligman. And so Martin Seligman, if you're into psychology, you'll recognize his name. He's kind of the godfather of positive psychology. I went there for a different reason and came out really focused and fascinated by this idea of resilience. And so I took that work that we were doing in school and started applying it and teaching it to the military and specifically to the U.S. Army through a program called the Comprehensive Soldier Family and Fitness and through a program called the Master Resilience Training Program. And basically what we were doing was we were trying to teach these soldiers the cognitive tools of resilience. Because we knew we have this long history, right, Ted? We have this long history of, you know, since World War I, of focusing on disease, focusing on pathology, things like depression and PTSD and anxiety. And these were things that, you know, in World War I, they would call like shell shock. But we don't, you know, we have this long history of studying it, but we don't have a really good track record of actually treating it. And so, you know, we kind of tried to flip the script a little and say, you know what, like, instead of trying to, you know, do something where what's the old adage? If you keep doing the same thing over and over and getting the same results, they call that insanity.
Right. Supposedly Einstein said it, but that's what people say.
Well, so, you know, we have this long, you know, and I'm not bagging on the community because they've made huge strides, but it was, you know, very incremental. So we said, you know what, not unlike Jonas Salk and the polio vaccine, maybe we could teach soldiers to be more resilient, inoculate them against the psychological ills of war or just the stresses of being in the military. Because we know, like, Ted, I can't predict the future. I can't say what's going to happen to you in 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years from now. But what I can predict with 100% accuracy is that you're going to encounter adversity. You're going to encounter tough times. And so to be able to bounce back and push through those adversities, through those tough times, you need to be resilient. And so we wanted to teach them these cognitive tools of resilience so that they could do that. And so that's what I would love to dive in with you today, talking about, you know, what is resilience and kind of, like you said, some of the myths and maybe even get into some of the tools that we use.
Would love to. And thanks for sharing your background and just really excited to have you on, because we cover so much health and fitness on this show and it does make you more resilient in a way, but people will still struggle with their mindset. In fact, one of the things that you just mentioned is that we know for sure you're going to experience adversity in your life. It's something that a lot of people have trouble with. They feel like, oh, this shouldn't be happening to me, or this shouldn't happen, or I shouldn't have to deal with this. People get into this why me situation, this why me, you know, mode of thought. And it's so funny because I just did a Buddhist meditation retreat, and they were even saying the same thing that you're saying. Hey, suffering is a part of life. And they've known, and Buddhism is over 2,000 years old. So this is something we've known, but I want to ask you about this in particular. What is it about the modern mindset, do you think, that makes us feel like we shouldn't experience any pain or anything bad when we have so much evidence in the world that, you know, this is going to be, you're going to have to suffer. You're going to have to deal with some bad times, some tough times. What do you think is going on there, Tom?
So there's a few things at play. I mean, there's the whole digital landscape and online social media and people only posting the best of the best, you know, that selfie of them looking amazing. That's part of it. But there's a lot of research that says this actually stems from back in the 70s. So back in the 70s, they did a study, and this is to show you how academics can go far afield or make mistakes. But they did the study and they said, you know, what makes people really successful? What makes people, you know, incredibly successful? And they through this study, they said, or they found that people that were successful had high self-esteem. And so this idea of like, well, we just got to make sure kids had high self-esteem. And so throughout the 70s and 80s, what they started doing was basically artificially boosting kids' self-esteem. And that's where you kind of get the, you know, everybody gets a trophy, everybody's a winner. You get that whole mentality. And, you know, that, so if you look through the social science, if you look through the literature, at least one hypothesis that has been borne out through research saying like, yeah, that was a big driver of this mindset where people saying like, yeah, like I've got to have self-esteem. Like if I don't, then things are bad and things are horrible and things are wrong in my life. So I think that self-esteem movement didn't do us any favors, because think about it. When kids are young, they're learning how to think. They're learning, they're seeing the people around them demonstrate this type of behavior. And so those are the kind of the fundamental thinking approaches that they take to the rest of their life. So fast forward to now, in my generation and from the 80s, people have this kind of erroneous belief that you should be, you know, feeling, you should have self-esteem, you should feel great all the time, because that's what school has taught you. That's what sports has taught you whenever you participate in these things. So I think that's part of it. And then I also think, you know, to a certain extent, we're a little hardwired for pessimism. And so pessimism plays a role in this. And when I say pessimism, I mean to say your explanatory style. So if something bad happens, or something good for that matter, but if something bad happens, what's your default mechanism? Do you say, oh, of course that happened, you know,
what, like, a great learning lesson, right? Yeah, no. Yeah,
right? Like, you know, imagine a kid nowadays going into its calc exam, and he or she, you know, let's say little Jimmy fails their first calc exam, and they say, well, I failed that exam because I suck at math. Like, I've always sucked at math. Well, that's like a very pessimistic explanatory style that you see again and again, and it's permanent, it's pervasive, and it's personal, right? You're saying, I suck at math, right? That's very personal, because I always sucked at math and I'm always going to suck at math. So that's permanent, pervasive, and personal. So I think those three things are big drivers of this mindset that is just unhealthy, you know, unhealthy in the face of the adversities that we're going to face every day.
Yeah, that's so good to hear your explanation of things. And I like how you brought it back to that change that started happening in the 70s, where we started focusing on self-esteem instead of, well, hey, thinking that you're amazing just because you were born, or because, you know, mommy and daddy love you or whatever. It seems like the nice thing to do, the right thing to do for some people, but it ends up putting people at a disadvantage as they get older. And you made such a great observation. While we're young, we're mostly hot cognition, that system one part of our brain, right? That that part of ourselves that is just, you're not consciously thinking about things. You're not evaluating the modeling that you're doing. You're not thinking, yeah, so I'm working on my self-esteem right now, and I'm everybody gets a trophy, and you know, is this going to be a good strategy for later on in life? We don't think like that way at all. We just soak it up like a sponge. But then 10, 20, 30 years go by and we wonder why we're having such a hard time, and we don't even think about it. We don't even trace it back to the fact that we had this type of training and we've had this unsuccessful approach to things. And, you know, we feel like it's us instead of just the perspective that we had when we were young. So most of the listeners, Tom, are in their 30s, 40s, 50s and up. What would you say is the way to start changing this? How do we start shifting our perspective to making things less personal, realizing that we can change and it's not permanent? And what do you recommend there?
Yeah, so I've got a few things. One, I'll start off with a quote from Stephen Colbert. So Stephen Colbert, you might know him. He's the late night host for CBS, The Late Night Show. And when he was with the improv group Second City in Chicago, and he said, you know, and he was talking about improv, but I think this principle applies to everyone in all parts of our life. He said, you got to learn to love the bomb. Like, if you want to be successful, you got to learn to love the bomb. And so, yeah, in improv, you're going to bomb on stage, because I've done improv. I was part of the Baltimore improv group for a few years. And for sure, that makes sense. But if you step back and you think about, like, what he's really saying there is learning to become comfortable being uncomfortable. So I would say start with that first, because again, that acknowledges that we are going to have some uncomfortable moments in our life. We are going to have some bad things happen in our life. We're going to have adversities. And so just recognize that we're not always going to be comfortable. We're not always going to be happy, and that's okay. So that's kind of step one. The other thing is, I would say, becoming aware of what I call the ABCs of resilience. So let's break that down. The ABCs of resilience. So A stands for the activating event or the adverse event. So typically what happens is, Something bad happens. Maybe you're driving on the road and someone cuts you off, right? You might yell, you might curse, you might even give that person the middle finger. You could say, hey, that person. And then what you would say is, hey, that person cutting me off, like, that led to me, you know, dropping the F-bomb and giving them the finger. But, like, what really happened is, if we back up a little bit, is that person cut you off, and then your brain created that belief. So that's where that B comes in of the ABCs. Created the belief, like, hey, that was unfair. That dude should never have cut me off. And that belief is what drove our behaviors and actions, right? Our course of action. So that's where the C comes in. And so just understanding that bad things don't cause bad, you know, like, a bad event doesn't cause the bad thing in and of itself. It's our beliefs about that that activating event that drive our behaviors, that drive our emotions, that drive the things that we do. And so once we recognize that, that's really important, because then what we can do is we can identify what happens. Because in that moment, you're on autopilot. Your brain, you know, the lizard part of your brain, right? That reptilian part of your brain is doing what it always does. It's using these cognitive shortcuts to process information. And for the most part, like, we do a good job of that. But, and we have to, because there's thousands, if not, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of pieces of data that our brain has to process every day. But in certain instances, it doesn't always serve us well. And so what we need to do is start identifying thinking traps. So those are what drive our beliefs about the activating event. So things like jumping to conclusions. Like, have you ever done that, Ted?
Oh, no, me never. Yeah. Of course, we always create these stories in our head that may, like, that person who cut you off, they may just be running late to work, or maybe their wife is pregnant with them and they're going to the hospital, and you're like just thinking he or she, whatever, had it out for you and just wanted to ruin your day.
Right. Right, exactly. And we all do this. And like I said, it helps us to navigate and process all the data, but it doesn't always help us out, especially in these times of stress or adverse times. So what you need to do is ultimately you need to slow down your thinking and get curious. Like, hey, why would he do that? Maybe he didn't see me. Like, maybe that's why he cut in front of me. He just didn't see my car. And when you start to get curious and find alternative, you know, reasons for why this guy cut you off, then you become more resilient, right? And because now you're not driving a terrible belief in your mind, and that's not controlling your behavior. There are other thinking traps too. There's what we call me, me, me. So where you kind of turn your focus inward, like, I can't believe this. Like, I should be getting this raise. I've been working so hard. I've been doing this. Well, like, take a step back, slow down your thinking, and get curious and start asking questions. Like, is it really, like, did I really work really that hard? Did I, et cetera, et cetera. And there's some other thinking traps that you can, a common one you can fall into is the confirmation bias. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Sure.
Yeah. So,
I believe a thing and I look for all the things, all the bits of information I can find to back up that belief instead of actually challenging it and to see if it really holds water.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's one that, you know, as humans, unfortunately, we're kind of hardwired to do because we are really good at making associations and meaning. And so, you know, there's a few others. There's minimizing and maximizing things. So we tend to, like my son today, he was mad because I took the iPad away from him. So we have kind of, I don't want to say strict, but we have fairly strict rules on how long they can have the iPad. And in the moment, you know, he was like, oh, I can't believe you. You took the iPad away. This is ridiculous. And like, he was just blowing this whole thing out of proportion. But what he was doing was in that moment, his belief system was maximizing the effect, right? But in reality, if he were to slow down and take a step back and start to get curious about, like, start asking him questions, like, is it really that big of a deal? So those are the types of thinking traps that we need to pay attention to. So that's one thing, like getting clear on like how we just process things and understanding it's not the thing itself, the bad event itself that drives, you know, how bad something is. It's our beliefs about it. So that's first thing I would say. The other thing, and this is huge, Ted, this is really, really, really important, is to identify your strengths. So this flies in the face of a lot of coaching and teaching where, you know, teachers, coaches, I remember my basketball coach from, you know, seventh grade when I was on a travel basketball team telling me like, Tom, your shooting's not great. You need to work on it. But not to say that we shouldn't work on our strengths, but all these people will tell you that you need to focus on improving your weaknesses. And the reality is, Ted, is that we didn't get to where we are. We didn't achieve the success we did because of our weaknesses. We got there because of our strengths. Okay.
Mm, yeah,
and
good point.
What's really important about this that comes from the data, from the social science data, is that most of us, we don't actually know what our strengths are. If you ask somebody what their strengths are, they might talk around it a little bit, but a lot of people don't know what it is. And so that's important because when we know what our strengths are and when we exercise those strengths and make them better, we become more successful. So we become more successful at work. We become more successful in school, in sports, and we become, and this is also important, we become more resilient because now when something bad happens, we say, oh, you know what? Like, my signature strength is perseverance. My signature strength is wisdom or courage. I can marshal those strengths in new and different ways because I use them. I double down on them. I make sure I'm cultivating them so I can marshal those resources when I need to the most. And so I would say, if you don't know what your strengths are, or even if you think you have an idea, go off and there's two ways you can do this. You can go to viacharacter.org. That's viacharacter.org. And they have a free character strengths test that you can take. And the report will show you kind of a rank ordering of all 24 character strengths, defining, you know, what those are, and most importantly, what your signature strengths are. And so another one you can do is StrengthsFinder 2.0. I don't know if you've ever heard of that one, but it's a fantastic, that one tends to be a little bit more business focused. Either one will do. The point here is you want to get clear on it. I tend to use the VIA character strengths more just because if you know the backstory behind them is the researchers, both Martin Seligman and Chris Peterson, that directly what they did was they had this big research study, longitudinal study, where they examined values and strengths across time, across cultures, across geography. Like basically they sliced it every way you could to determine what values and strengths were universally regarded as good and idealistic. And then that's how they derived their 24 character strengths. And so basically what you want to do is you want to identify, once you find out what those strengths are, then you can start using those strengths, right? And you can be very intentional about practicing those strengths. Take one or two strengths for a week, 2 weeks, and just focus in on like, how can I use this strength? How can I use it in a new and different way? And then at the end of each day, take some time to reflect on how did I use my strength today? So like one of my signature strengths is perseverance. Another one is humor. So I might pick humor and say like, how did I use my signature strength of humor today? You know, my 11-month-old daughter was having a meltdown and I was able to make her laugh using my signature strength of humor this morning. So
just
finding, you got it. Listen, it's not just for kicks and grins. This really does work. And so what that does is it allows you to strengthen this muscle, because it's just like, it's like any other muscle, right? It's a cognitive muscle that we're using so that when something bad happens, I can go back to these strengths that I've been practicing using, the things that I do best, that like just I feel alive, like getting out of bed. I don't have to do anything. I just bring these strengths to bear. So that's a really, really important thing to do as well. So far we've got learning your ABCs of resilience, becoming aware of that. We've got character strengths, identifying what those character strengths are and how to use them in new and different ways. The other big one is your communications style. So Ted, has anybody ever told you about active constructive responding?
No. I've done a bunch of courses on communication, or maybe public speaking is a better way to characterize it. Never heard that term before. What is that?
Okay, so this is really important too. So we got to learn how to respond and communicate using an active constructive response. And this is really important because it helps people feel supported and to connect authentically. And so again, when bad things happen, we need to be able to feel supported. We need to be able to connect with the people around us, because ultimately it's the people around us that are going to help us get through that, right? Along with our own, you know, kind of our own cognitive will, if you will. So let me break this down. There are kind of four ways that you can respond. There's what we call active constructive. There's active destructive. There's passive constructive and passive destructive. So let's go back to the beginning here. Active constructive. This is an authentic, enthusiastic response. It's like showing people that you genuinely care and that you're curious to learn more. So let's say I got a raise at work and I come home and I tell my wife. She might say, if she was responding in an active, constructive way, she might say, you know, honey, that's amazing. Like, you know, when did it happen? Like, how did it feel when they told you got that, you know, that raise and you got that promotion? Like, tell me more about this. So she's showing that like authentic, genuine response. This way, this active constructive, this is where we want to be. This shows that we are, you know, authentically supporting them, that we're connecting. And it's the way that like we feel best supported. So both in good times and in bad times. Now let's talk about the other three, because this is where a lot of people end up in. Very oftentimes when you start to do a little self-analysis, you'll be shocked by like how little you do active constructive responding. So the other one is active destructive. And that means like you're actively quashing the event. You're being dismissive, you're being demeaning. So if we go back to that example of me getting a raise and a promotion, I come home to my wife and she's like, ah, great. That means you're gonna be working more now. And you're gonna be working later. Fantastic. Right? Like being right. Very dismissive. She's actively kind of quashing my good news that I'm sharing with her. The next one we have is passive constructive. So this is kind of quiet, understated support, a delayed response. So you might say, oh, that's nice. And that's kind of it, right? Kind of just this passive response. And then finally, you have passive destructive, which is just ignoring the person or turning the focus inward, where you're like, you know, I come home, I tell my wife and she's like, yeah, okay, that's nice. Hey, I just learned a new recipe, how to cook scalloped potatoes. This is really cool. Like just totally ignoring it, right? And so what ends up happening is when we respond to people in those, you know, those three latter ways, we're not supporting with them. You know, we're not supporting them. We're not connecting to them authentically. And again, in times of adversity, that's important because you build up that that currency, if you will, of connection, of support. And just as is important in times of good times, like when I share something positive. And in some ways, it's more important when you're sharing something positive to have that active, constructive response come back to you, or vice versa if you're responding to somebody else. So, you know, I think bottom line here is, like, that's where we want to be. When we do that, we become more resilient. We help the people around us become more resilient. We demonstrate that good behavior, right? It's best not to just tell somebody what to do. It's to demonstrate that behavior. And again, they become more resilient.
And that's so powerful, Tom.
Yeah, no, I love this stuff. And I think, you know, the good thing about this, Ted, is that these are all, like, in some ways intuitive. Like, once you learn them, you're like, okay, that makes sense. That makes intuitive sense. Now, I will say that, you know, learning to respond in an active, constructive way, learning to use our signature strengths, or becoming aware of your ABCs of resilience, these are what I call, like, foundational, right? Like, you're starting to build that strong foundation for your house. And that's all well and good. But sometimes you need something, like, in the moment. And so I want to give you one more thing that I think will help you and your listeners to become more resilient. And this is what I call, like in the moment. Sometimes we just need to marshal something, like, in the moment. I'm circling the drain right now. Like, I am catastrophizing, which is to say, like, I'm ruminating about, like, all the bad things that could happen. That's really bad. So if that ever happens to you, you can use this method. This is kind of a real-time resilience method. And it's called PIP, and it stands for put it in perspective. So I'll say that again, PIP, put it in perspective. And this is, again, this is a simple tool that you can use to marshal some real-time resilience. Here's how it works. If something bad is happening, so let's say this happened to my dad a few years ago. He had a health screening done, and he had a PSA, PSA test. So when you get older, they start testing your prostate. Good times getting older. And it came back abnormal. So what would a lot of people do in that moment, you think?
I have cancer.
Yeah.
Prostate cancer.
Like, I'm panicking. I'm panicking like crazy. So instead of doing that, like, I want you to follow these five steps. First, I want you to describe kind of the activating event, like the bad thing that's happening. Part of that is, like, it's kind of like when people tell you to journal, like, just get it down. And then what I want you to do is to capture your worst case thoughts. So in this example, you know, for my dad, he might've been like, just like you said, like, crap, I've got cancer. I'm going to die. My family won't have a father. They won't have a provider. Like, this is bad news. Okay, great. Now I want you to capture the best case thoughts. So this might look like, you know, something like, well, you know what, Ted, they mixed up the results. They sent it to the wrong person. There's no way I have cancer. Okay. Now I want you to identify the most likely outcomes. Okay. So in this example, maybe that looks like, you know, the PSA, it's a first stage screening. It's got a lot of, you know, it does have a high false positive rate. It also doesn't indicate that you have cancer. Sometimes it can just be an enlarged prostate. You know, and a lot of times with PSA, people just say, you know, this is something that we can watch and wait for a while. And the PSA number, it can fluctuate for a number of reasons, all of which are not cancer related. So, and in fact, actually, this is what they did for my dad. Like, they just said, well, let's watch and wait. And the next PSA was fine. So the final thing that I want you to do after those four steps is to develop a plan of action for dealing with the most likely outcome. Okay, so I have an abnormal PSA reading. I'm going to need to meet with my doctor to find out what the steps are to you know, next to determine the cause. I'm going to need to let my wife know what's going on, so, you know, she can be there to help and support me, whatever it ends up being, and so on and so on. And so what's good about this is it kind of short circuits this tendency that we all have to do, you know, this tendency that we all have, and that is either rumination or catastrophizing, because what you're saying is you're giving, you know, you're kind of giving a chance to say, okay, here are all the bad things that happen. Here are all the, you know, and then you get that out of your system. And then you immediately move towards the most likely. And then you finish with developing a plan of action, because people want to be able to do something. And so this kind of gives them that time and space to be able to do that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what I'm seeing as a theme in all these recommendations, all these steps and strategies that you're giving, is we have this wiring, whether it's our biological wiring, whether it's how we learned how to react to something when we were young, and we need to start getting better self-awareness, better awareness of our reactions, what triggers us. We need to get better self-awareness of what our strengths are so we can magnify those. We need to get better awareness of our communication style and to make sure that we're building strong bonds with the people who we spend a lot of time with, the people who we love, so that when things go wrong, we have those strong bonds to rely on. And it's not just more added stress on top of a situation or a relationship that isn't that good to begin with. And then calming down also with our negative responses. Like you said, we have that negativity bias, that where we're designed to look for threats and to respond to them, because in the past on the plains, when we were hunting and gathering, it probably saved a lot of lives. But in modern society, when you get a PSA test that's abnormal, it may or may not indicate something, and you don't have enough knowledge to evaluate it in the first place unless you're a medical doctor.
Yep.
You really have to pause and say, what do I really know here? What's that worst outcome? What's the best outcome? And, you know, plan for a strategy for the most likely outcome. It makes so much sense. And Tom, I want to actually go in a little bit of a different direction, because as you're saying all this, and it makes so much sense, but what I see, and I think a lot of people listening, while they may not be familiar with some of the terms you're using, this, it seems like common sense, a lot of this stuff that you're saying. And maybe even some people who are listening already know at least some of the things that you've mentioned, but they're not doing it. And what I immediately think of, especially in America, what's going on in America right now, a lot of people are watching Fox News or CNN, or they're on Facebook and they're talking about the latest thing that we should all be outraged about. And I think it's really important to understand, if you're in this constant state of heightened stress or heightened fear, you're just, it's going to be such a, it's already so hard to stop our natural reaction to things, whether that's our training or our biological wiring. But if you're in this constant state of fear and stress because you're arguing with people, because you're upset about things, because you're just, you know, focused on all these negative events that really, before the advent of social media, you'd have to wait for the paper to come out and or the nightly news show to come on to get outraged. But now we can get outraged every minute of every day if we want, because of the sheer amount of information out there, and because of the negative to positive, the bias of negative news over positive, because people just don't care about the shooting that didn't happen in all the schools where nothing went wrong, or the terrorist attacks that never happened. Nobody's interested in that stuff, or the planes that didn't crash, or the people swimming with sharks that didn't get attacked. Nobody cares about that stuff. There's nothing newsworthy about it. So I guess what I'm getting around to is, what would you say to people who feel like they're stuck in that situation where they're spending a lot of their time? Okay, they're listening to Legendary Life podcasts, probably a bunch of other podcasts, and they're helping, but maybe they also spend a lot of time arguing on Facebook or watching the news, which is, you know, I don't know any channel that's going to be very helpful.
If it bleeds, it leads.
If it bleeds, it leads, right?
Yep.
Or maybe, let's talk about these two situations. So maybe they're listening to things like this and your show and other shows, but they still engage in some of that behavior. And then the second situation, which is probably the most common, is that maybe they're on this personal development journey, but their spouse isn't, or their friends aren't, and so they come in contact with it. What would you say about dealing with those two different situations?
Yeah, so that's really a great point, Ted, because look, we know that the internet's not going anywhere. We know that the 24/7 news cycle is not going anywhere. The addiction with social media is not going anywhere. So I could sit here and say, well, you know, just don't go on the news and don't go on your phones and don't go on the internet. But that's probably not going to happen. People are going to continue to do that by and large. So I've got a few ideas or things that I would recommend, and they're rooted in the research from positive psychology, and in particular from positive emotions. So Barbara Fredrickson is a legend in psychology, and she's done a lot of work around positive emotions. And I'll just kind of smash cut to the end here. But the story is that positive emotions are good for you. They're good at regulating your hormones. They're good at all the way down to the cellular level. So she's shown that like the more positive emotions that we have, the less cortisol that's released. And when cortisol is released, when we experience more positive emotions, it can actually modulate how much cortisol is released. And then also how it expresses how the disease causing at the cellular level, like how the genes that express to control disease causing, you know, I'm trying to think of the way to, I'm not saying it correctly, but how your genes control potential diseases, right? And it affects you at this level. So I'm not going to dive into all of the research behind the positive emotions, but what I want to tell you is that positive emotions are really important. The more that we have them, the better. And she actually had a paper that talked about what's called the Losada ratio. There's some controversy behind the statistics behind it, but long story short, the more positive emotions that we experience, the better. And so there are a lot of different ways that you can do this, even in this kind of crazy world that we're doing, that we live in. And so one of the things that I always advocate is keeping two things, keeping a gratitude journal. And we teach this thing in with the soldiers called hunt the good stuff. And so we do this every night at my dinner table with my kids. We say, hey, hunt the good stuff, guys. Like, what were some good things that happened today? And so my kids will be like, well, you know, I got to play at recess, or, you know, I mom made me my favorite, you know, meal or whatever. And we go around and each person gets a chance to share their good things that happened that day. And then we also do what's called a gratitude journal, which is like at the end of the day, we just write down like what are three things that we're grateful for. And so it turns out, Ted, that just by doing the gratitude journal, just by doing the hunt the good stuff, it seems like it doesn't, I mean, that takes 5 minutes out of the day to do either or. But when you do that, it actually has a more robust effect on depression after 6 months than almost anything out there. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's huge. And so why I share that is because, to your point, people aren't going to, like, the news isn't going away. But if we can find these ways that don't take a lot of time, but that help kind of reset our happiness point, if you will, that will make huge dividends down the road. So that's one thing that I do. The other thing that I do that I think is really helpful is, and this goes back to, it's all pointing back to helping us experience more positive emotions, right? Because like in the hunt the good stuff example, you're reliving those moments from the day that were really great. And so when you relive those moments, you get to experience those positive emotions all over again. So that's why we do the hunt the good stuff. That's why we do the gratitude journal, where we talk about, you know, three things that we're grateful for the day. And then the other thing I do, which is along the same lines of experiencing positive emotions, is I create a positive portfolio. And for each person, this is going to be different. For me, I have pictures of my kids. I have pictures of my wife. I have pictures from when I was back in my tennis playing days and from high school basketball, like all the things that, you know, just that give me positive emotions, that make me feel happy, that make me feel warm. And so, you know, once a day, I'll just take a look through there and look through those images. Now, it doesn't have to be images. It could be other things. There was a guy, and I can't remember his name now. He was a famous designer. His positive portfolio was going out on a motorcycle ride. Like, that was the thing that he enjoyed so much. Like, he just loved being out on an open, curvy road and like, just, you know, getting on his motorcycle. But whatever that, like, that thing is that you really enjoy, or that brings you, you know, some warmth and happiness, like, make sure that you can make that repeatable. And then just check in with that at least once a day. Does that make sense?
Powerful stuff. Absolutely. And I think this is not only powerful, but very practical. As you said, the the world isn't going to be, well, the world is changing, but it's changing at a certain rate, right? And we don't need to go into how the news isn't reflecting the statistics and how, you know, the world's actually better than it's ever been in many, many ways. Yep. But what we can do is start to add this practice. I love that you sit down and you have your family do it, because to me, that is just like, I bet you have a very positive and calm household, with the exception of whenever you take your son's iPad away. But even then, you help him through it and you, you know, make your daughter laugh. And I just love this because it's what I think a lot of people struggle because of their relationships and their communication. And if they have a family, then it's even compounded sometimes. You got your kids that are acting crazy. You don't know what to do. In fact, so many parents, they just give them the iPad so that they'll shut up. And and you're showing how to increase those positive emotions, that those positive feelings, and how to set the stage for, especially if you're a parent, you're teaching your kids how to do this stuff as well. Not because you're sitting them down and talking to them about the importance of it, but you're modeling the behavior for them. You're being a leader. And I think that's just so important. Man, I this is one of the best interviews that I've done in a long time. And I think this is really crucial information, especially for the state of affairs that we're in the United States and other countries that are so wealthy and have such a high quality of life in terms of the, you know, the basics in terms of food and access to healthcare and whatnot. But for some reason, we're all unhappy and we're stressed and we feel like the world's full of doom and gloom when it's really not.
Well, you know, to that point, I would say that, you know, stress is always going to be there, and we have to learn how to work with stress. You know, there's a really good book by Kelly McGonigal called The Upside of Stress. I don't know if you ever, have you ever read that book?
I haven't, and I have never heard about it before until I learned about it from you.
Yeah, so I would encourage you and everybody else to check that book out. I actually have a free book summary that I put together for it. So if your listeners would like to download that and get kind of a preview of what the book is about and like what are some of the key insights, I'd love to give that to them. They can find it at nextyearnowpodcast.com/legendary. And at that site, you'll find the download for the book summary for The Upside of Stress by Kelly McGonigal. If you're at all interested in learning kind of more details or more nuance and more, I'll just say more about resilience and becoming resilient, I'm going to be dropping a masterclass, online masterclass in the beginning of 2019. And I'd love to give you and your listeners 50% off that masterclass. For so if you go to nextyearnowpodcast.com/legendary and sign up for the newsletter, you'll get 50% off. You'll reserve your spot for 2019, and then also you can just download right away the book summary for The Upside of Stress, because like I said, you know, stress is going to be there for all of us, and we've got to learn to work with it. And I think between, you know, the insights from that book and then using these cognitive tools of resilience, we're going to be a lot better off for it.
Excellent. Excellent. And if you're listening right now and you're blown away about how practical and important this information is, make sure you go to Tom's website and sign up for this. Tom, you totally blew me away today. I knew it was going to be good, but I love how you have this great balance between the academic side of knowing how to deal with stress and how to teach it, but also you're very practical in your approach. And that's definitely what we need more of. Academics are so important, and so is the practical application, but you've really done an amazing job of being in that sweet spot where you utilize both effectively. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing this information today.
Oh, thanks, Ted. Thanks for having me on. It was an absolute pleasure. I love talking to you and I love talking about resilience. So we'll have to do it again soon.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Let's do that. I want to dive into some of the things that we maybe can go a bit deeper on, but it's just something that's so important that so many people need. So thank you again. Totally blew me away and can't wait to talk to you next time.
All right. Thanks, Ted.
That wraps up another episode of the Legendary Life podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Tom Hefner as much as I did. Tom is such a rock star, such a great person to speak to. Not only is he super knowledgeable, but every time I have a conversation with Tom, I just walk away with something that I didn't know before, a new perspective, a new idea. And I hope you got that from Tom's episode today. Make sure you check out his show. He's got a great podcast called Next Year Now. He's interviewed people like Angela Duckworth, whose work on grit is, she's the one who brought grit to the forefront. And then we have Adam Grant, another person who is a best-selling author. Definitely a show you should pay attention to if you haven't listened to it already. And the last thing I want to leave you with is the coaching that I'm opening up for 2019. Now, here's the deal. You don't have to start right away. We can even start at the beginning of the year, but I'm closing the spots now. In other words, I'm letting people hire me now. I'm taking clients now, and I have a limited number of spots. Again, this isn't some false scarcity. There's a ton of spots. I do one-on-one work. It's highly intensive. I take you by the hand and walk you step by step through everything that you need to do. I give world-class support. That means if something is going wrong, we hop on and solve it. Thankfully, I haven't had to do too much of that, but I've done it, and the people who work with me really appreciate it. This isn't one of these coaching experiences that you may have signed up for, or even my group coaching experience where we don't have a relationship, we're not that connected. This is really intensive, and again, I offer world-class support. That said, it's not for everyone. It's for people who are truly committed, people who are coachable, and people who are decisive. So if you're a person who's been working hard, but you haven't had results in the past month, you haven't had results in the past 3 months, and you've been stuck on a plateau, and you think it's your age, or maybe you maxed out your genetic potential, or some ridiculous thing like your metabolism is too slow. None of that is true. It's your program that isn't dialed in. And I am an expert at dialing programs in for people. I've been doing it for 20 years, and I have the results to show for it. And so my new one-on-one coaching program, Bulletproof Body, is open now. And if you're interested, what I want you to do, I want you to go to legendarylifepodcast.com/talk and set up a call with me. And we'll talk about where you are right now, what you're struggling with right now, what you want to achieve, and whether or not you're truly committed to doing it. And if it's a good fit, I'll invite you into the coaching program. If I think you're ready for it, if I think you're a person who will actually do the work, and you're looking for that next level to break through that plateau, to get better results than probably you've ever gotten with any program ever. And if that's you, again, go to legendarylifepodcast.com/talk. Let's have a conversation about it. The conversation is free. We'll go through everything for free. And again, if I feel like you're a good fit, I'll invite you into the program. If not, no worries. Happy to connect with you. Happy to help you. And that's how I roll. So that's how I'm going to finish things off. Have an amazing week, and I'll speak to you soon.